can the swipe of an app stop bullying in a local school district? Good morning. We're live from Studio 5, and this is First Coast Connect. I'm Melissa Ross, and thanks for listening. Just ahead this morning, how local schools are empowering kids to use their phones to stop bullying and cyber abuse. What are your questions? Get on the line now, 549-2937 to join us. Then later, is climate change hazardous to Florida's health? One doctor says yes. Plus, a run for folks who love Girl Scout cookies. Yes, it's that time of year again. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first this hour, next week, the Glynn County, Georgia school system plans to launch a new program called Stop It. It's a new technology platform that helps schools stop bullying, cyber abuse, threats of violence, kids self-harming, and other troublesome behaviors. Now, the way Stop It works is students can submit anonymous reports through the platform, either by text message, photos, or video. They go straight to school administrators, who can then conduct investigations and make schools safer. We were really curious to learn more about Stop It, so we're going to take a closer look at this new app and also how bullying affects kids in schools and how that's being studied here in our area. As we welcome Dr. David Cheshire, Associate Professor, UF Health Jax. He's on the line. Good morning, Doctor.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
Neil Hooper is with us. He's the Chief Operating Officer for Stop It, also joining us by phone. Hi, Neil. All right, I guess we don't have Neil yet. We'll try to get him in a moment. And joining us here in studio, Brenna Rodenheiser. She's a contributor to the Jacksonville Moms blog. Brenna, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Thanks for being with us. Okay, so in a moment, we'll learn a little bit more about the stop. Actually, we do have Neil. There's Neil. Neil Hooper.
Hi, Melissa.
Hi, Neil, Chief Operating Officer of Stop It. Thanks for being with us. And the number to join us as we talk about this app is 549-2937. That's 549-2937, or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, and you can weigh in on Facebook as well. All right, Neil Hooper, Stop It, this new app that's going to launch next week up in Georgia in Glynn County. How does it work?
Well, I think you gave a great introduction. We're in over 3,000 schools now. And what happens is we announce to the students that the app is available. They go to the App Store or Google Play and download the app. They type in their school code, and then they are their messages are routed directly to school administrators. It works really well, and actually what the audience may be interested in is we often find that it's a bystander that is submitting the report.
Right. Empowering kids who are not either bullies or being bullied to speak up. The bystander effect, that's been studied in schools. This is a way for kids who might, I guess, feel intimidated about speaking up to do so. Is that right?
Well, that's right. And key to our solution is that we provide anonymity for the students. You know, the greatest fear that most kids have in school is being labeled a snitch. You know, I think many of us would agree that our kids are good kids and they want to do the right thing, but they're afraid to do the right thing. So by making it anonymous, they can have the courage to do the right thing, speak up when they know something is wrong. And as I said, the message will be routed directly to the school. And then the school, with the Stop It platform, can communicate back and forth with the student on the app and gather more information about what's going on. We find that giving the kids an avenue to speak up and then giving the school a way to communicate back and forth with that brave reporter can help us get to the bottom of issues before they spiral out of control. And I think, you know, the downstream effects of not addressing bullying can be really scary. And you know, we're seeing some horrible statistics nationally about youth depression and youth suicide. And we really want to get ahead of these things before they spiral out of control.
Just last week, a 10-year-old boy in Louisville, Kentucky, committed suicide, and his parents say it's because he had been bullied at school over a medical condition, a medical defect that he had. And so, Neil, you know, this is very serious business. Kids are killing themselves. Let me ask you, though, as a follow-up, with the Stop It app, are you concerned at all about kids using it maliciously, filing false reports? And are there legal issues, liability issues around kids taking videos and sending them to administrators?
Well, I'll take the legal question first. The good news is that these solutions are protected by federal law. So there is no issue whatsoever of a minor reporting these things to the school. The network is entirely private, so it's the students' reports go only to the school, and then the school communicates back and forth with the students. So that is, there's no liability there. That's been investigated, and we abide by COPPA and FERPA and other related federal laws. So that's okay. The schools themselves have, of course, the responsibility to read these messages if they're sent in, and we provide a service, and Glynn County has added this service. We'll actually monitor the account for our schools to make sure that they're made aware that something has been reported. We'll contact the school to let them know, a child has sent something. So we really have their back, so to speak, to make sure that, you know, if something is reported, it's taken care of.
Brenna Rodenheiser, who writes for the Jacksonville Moms blog, and you've written about bullying as a parent.
Yes.
As you're listening to this, what are your thoughts?
Oh, well, I think it's fantastic. I think it's great to have that resource available for children who are old enough to use it. I think that it is a great segue from, you know, teaching younger children how to address bullying. And then once they are older and it's appropriate to use that app, I think it's fantastic.
And Dr. David Cheshire is on the line with us from UF Health Jax. Until recently, you were a trauma psychologist. And Dr. Cheshire, UF Health has even been conducting a study on the public health effects of school bullying. What are your thoughts about the way new technological innovations are being developed to address this issue? Because certainly schools have tried all kinds of avenues to deal with bullying. What about this?
Yeah, no, I always say when we do public health meetings, the second we start talking about bullying, that's the rest of the meeting. It's what we're going to talk about from that point forward, because it is such a sprawling problem and difficult to deal with. I'm in favor of any tools that are out there that we can use that are effective, and this one sounds like a great one. It's going to be as effective as the school makes it. I like what he said earlier about the school is ultimately responsible for investigating what's going on, and I think that's where basically everything's going to fall. For children, well, for anybody really, but for children in particular, what's most important is that they feel that they'll be believed when they make a report, that they feel that there'll be some sort of follow-up, and that they don't have to fear retaliation, which kind of gets at that question you had about, will this be used to actually, in and of itself, be bullying too? So to the extent that kids feel comfortable with this, I think it could be an amazing tool to try to identify and ultimately defeat bullying in the schools.
So Neil Hooper of Stop It, this is unrolling next week in Glynn County, Georgia. You're also in some other Florida school districts and districts all over the country, correct? And I believe you're even looking at using this app in adult workplaces as well. Is that right?
That's right. We have 12 live accounts in Florida. We're new to Florida, and we're expanding across the country. Yes, the issues that we're describing in schools, I think we would all agree, often are seen in the workplace as well. Around harassment and discrimination concerns, once again, these things happen and people are afraid to speak up because they're afraid about their job, right? So the power of Stop It is with the ability to report anonymously and for the right people to communicate back to the individual to gather more information about what's going on.
And how about the fact, too, that kids use their phones to bully each other, to cyberbully each other? Yeah. So, in effect, you're giving children a weapon, I guess, to fight back, empowering them to use their phones to turn the dynamic around, it
well,
sounds
Melissa,
like.
Well, Melissa, I'm glad you brought that up. And that's what you've just said there was the formation of our company. We noticed that with the advent of smartphones and kids over the last few years have increasing access to both smartphones and social media applications, they are using those devices and those applications to cyberbully. And, you know, often the cyberbullying is done in a group environment. Imagine in many of these cases, there are three or four or five or six classmates, you know, picking on another student in one of these group text settings. And as you said, we can turn this situation around. You can take a screenshot of this horrible behavior, attach it to a stop it report, send it to the administration, and you have an adult step in and put an end to this very bad behavior.
We'll go to your calls in a moment about the new Stop It app. Do you think it can stop bullying in your child's school? It's 549-2937 to join us. Brenna Rodenheiser of the Jacksonville Moms blog. This is something you've blogged about, how important it is to educate kids not to be silent if they see another child being bullied or harmed. There's a documentary film about this. Submit the documentary that you've blogged about. Do you think that with your own kids, I know that with your own kids, you've had to talk to them about bullying and try to comfort them sometimes when they've dealt with school bullies, as so many of us have as parents. You know, it's terrifying as a parent to think about your child being treated this way, you know.
Right.
So the bystander effect is real. Bystanders can do a lot of good or they can do a lot of harm.
Right. They absolutely can. You know, it's important to me as a mom to teach my children the importance of being a safe place for their friends and their, you know, their neighbors, people in their community, teaching them that they should always be a warm and welcoming place that someone would feel safe to tell them if something was making them sad or hurting their feelings.
Dr. Cheshire with UF Health, can you bring us up to date? I don't think you're the lead author on the study, but on the study that UF Health is conducting right now about bullying and how it is a public health crisis for young people.
Sure. Basically, the numbers are kind of all over the place, depending on the research you're looking at for how often bullying occurs. And not just focusing on those being bullies, the survivors of bullying, but also the bullies themselves, because so many people who are bullying have been bullied themselves. And the reason that so much of the research right now is looking at children is because this is a formative time where people are learning how to deal with adversity. And so the very same coping strategies that they learn and what's effective and what keeps them safe is what they're going to take with them into adulthood. And so if you learn that aggression for the sake of aggression worked for you as a bully, you're probably going to bring that with you to college and beyond. And it's going to start getting you into all kinds of trouble there. So focusing on children to learn more effective strategies of how to deal with adversity, how to deal with not getting your own way, and also how to deal when somebody is stepping on your own rights, who to go to, where are safe places to go. And absent that, too often people isolate themselves because they don't trust authority or they don't know who to go to or which adults to go to. And there's so many resources out there, from the school teacher to the principal to the school psychologist to the school social worker and on and on. The children don't feel safe with those people. They isolate themselves and become further targets for bullying, too, because they lose their resources.
Wow. All right, let's go to some calls now about this new Stop It app that will start being available next week in Glynn County, Georgia schools. 549-2937. Timothy is in St. Augustine. Hi, Timothy. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning, guys.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, yeah, so I was just trying to address the situation, and this is a beautiful organization that's going on, and there was just a comment made that the guys were picking on an individual that was in this chat or conversation, and this conversation is between these individuals, and this individual could leave at any point. And so I don't understand the logic why the person just doesn't remove himself. And anybody in this situation, remove yourself.
Well, Tim, I mean, do you understand how bullying works in schools? Kids get beat up, kids get threatened,
ma'am.
Kids get, you know, treated terribly sometimes.
Yes, ma'am. I am very aware of this. I am a victim of this.
Okay.
And I really believe that you don't need these friends, and these people need to look to people that are a little more kind, a little more like themselves. Don't look for popularity. Don't look for these people that treat you like that. Remove yourself from the situation. But I am not trying to be negative towards this organization.
Okay.
It's beautiful.
All right, Tim. Thanks for the call, Tim. Thanks for the call. Jack is in Jacksonville. Hi, Jack. Good morning. Go ahead.
Yes, good morning to you.
Go ahead.
Hello. Yep. It's about the bullying.
And are you on speakerphone, Jack? Please speak right into your phone.
Okay. I'm from Jacksonville, Florida. Is that better?
Go ahead, Jack.
Yep. I'm a retired science teacher, and several years ago I was teaching science at the Dunbar Middle School in Houston, Texas, and I was out in the athletic field all alone, and six strapping teenagers came in from the nearby forest, and the leader says to me, "You want to fight?" And I looked him back in the eye, and I said, "Nobody wins a fight," and what he did was he led his group away. He says, "You're a good teacher." So I just wanted to show how sometimes directness and not being afraid works out.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, Jack. You know, Neil, what kind of feedback are you getting from other teachers about the Stop It app?
Well, it's remarkable the feedback we get. I think we're talking about, you know, Jack's example is something very public. What teachers tell us and schools tell us is it's often the kid that they thought was very happy, they thought was very popular, they thought everything was going really well, but it turns out he or she was really depressed, you know, was getting picked on perhaps because they are the popular kid or they are the smart kid. And, you know, these kids are very troubled. And back to your question, the teachers, we get daily feedback thanking us for uncovering issues that they just didn't know was going on. I think we live in an increasingly complex world, and we can see the fights in the playground, and we can see maybe the shoving in the hallway, but we don't see the bullying that goes on in the cafeteria or online and in the evening away from school. Sometimes we don't see those things, and the teachers thank us for helping bring these things to light.
Let's go to Susan now in Mandarin. Hi, Susan. What are your thoughts?
Hi. So I was wondering how specifically this is going to be investigated, because do we have enough social workers and counselors in the school to help this? And how are they really going to delineate if somebody reports something, who is really the bully in the situation?
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's kind of hard to tell. Like in that recent incident, I didn't read about it until later, but we had 200 Catholic boys wearing MAGA hats. We had five black men, and we had a couple of American Indians playing drums. And it seems like from what I saw on social media, different people viewed those people differently as victims.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
I mean,
yeah, Susan. Yeah, and so certainly you can look at a piece of video and it can seem clear cut what happened, but not always. And I thank you for the question. And you're referring to the incident with the Covington Catholic students that were up in Washington for the March for Life. Thanks, Susan. Okay, so Neil, what about the investigative procedure for this? How can students and parents trust that educators will weed out the false reports and weed out the malicious reports where maybe one student is just trying to get revenge on another student and actually investigate the real incidents?
Well, it's an excellent question. And, you know, it's quite frankly part of the reason why we're seeing so much success is that there aren't enough counselors. And, you know, the counselors that we do have are looking for tools to help them be more efficient. So a couple of things. You know, it is true that a kid could send a, you know, false or malicious report. However, because the Stop It platform allows administration to have one-on-one dialogue in response to a message, what we find is that, I'm sure you tell your own children, once you tell a little lie, it's really hard to keep that lie going. So a little one-on-one dialogue very quickly uncovers the truth.
I see. Okay, I gotcha.
But we also do arm our schools with, you know, content about how to diagnose issues and what is depression and what is bipolar disorder and what are the things that contribute to, you know, the problems that we're seeing. And we find those resources really help.
Barbara tweets the show, does Stop It have a GPS component? Neil?
Yeah. We are investigating that. We do not have that right now. That would obviously present problems with privacy, and we've elected to not go that route because we think tracking the location of minors is probably a bad idea.
Speaking of that, here's an email from Martha. Will there be repercussions if kids use their cell phones in a place where cell phone usage isn't allowed? You know, my child in middle school is told you can't use your cell phone during the day. So what about that?
Yeah, you know, it's a great question. A lot of schools have policies like that. We actually notice that the peak time for reports is right after school. So I think that what's happening is on the way home or in the bus or, you know, when they do get home and the child has a chance to decompress and think, what just happened today? And they realize, you know what, that I need to report that. So in between the hours of 4 and 7 is really the peak time that we see a lot of the reports.
Let's take one more call about the new Stop It app. Kat is in Jacksonville. Hi, Kat. Good morning. Go ahead.
Good morning. Thank you for taking the call.
Sure.
My question is, if you're bullied one-on-one and you report this bullying through your phone app and then actions are taken against that bully, isn't that bully going to know exactly who the person is that, you know, reported them, and then there might be repercussions?
Right, and I'm sure kids are worried about that as well. We actually just lost the call with Neil. I apologize. Let's close with David Cheshire of UF Health Jax. Whether it's through an app or through educating your child or having a dialogue with educators, what advice do you have for parents that are listening to this?
Yeah, thank you. I think these are all amazing questions your callers have brought up. And I think what's most important to keep in mind here is the app to me isn't so much about consequences for the bully, though that's an important piece. It's more about educating about how often this is happening, because too often bullying is going on outside of the teacher's attention, on a playground, after school, before school, in a cafeteria, places like that. And this is a way for the school system to actually get a pretty good real-time indication of how prevalent bullying is, and then starting a conversation there in education. So often people don't even know what bullying is. Certainly children may not know what bullying is, and they may not know that what they're doing is in fact bullying. And education goes a long way to working this out. And then kind of building on that and then working in the consequences pieces and things like that. But I think we have to start with identifying and defining what the problem is so that everybody can get on the same page. And also identifying what the resources are. For instance, your first caller asked, why not just remove yourself from the situation? It's great advice, except it's not always plausible that somebody can remove themselves from a situation. And should it really be incumbent on the victim to have to take the onus of stopping the bullying and not put that onus on the bully themselves?
All right. We'll have to leave it there. Brenna Rodenheiser, Jack's Mom's blog, Neil Hooper, who is the COO of Stop It, and Dr. David Cheshire of UF Health Jax. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Much more still ahead. Later, our movable feast drops in on Leaf and Bean. But up next, pressing local governments to get serious about climate change. We'll be right back.
Creation of the devil, a rebel. I'm bringing food to the people like a widow. Bringing flowers to a grave in the middle of the city. Isolation is a riddle. To be surrounded by a million other people, but feel alone like a tree in the desert. Dried up like the skin of a lizard, but full of color like the spots of a leopard. Drum and bass pull me in like a shepherd. Scratch my itch like a needle on a record. Full of life like a man going to Mecca. Sky high like an eagle up soaring. I speak low but I'm like a lion roaring.
When Nathaniel Mary Quinn was 15 years old, his family abandoned him.
When everyone headed back to have lunch, I had my Walkman and I would play Al Green's How Can You Mend a Broken Heart.
Today, he's a celebrated painter. The origins of creativity, next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRX.
Sunday at 3 p.m. on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, the city of Jacksonville has come under criticism in recent years for not being proactive about planning for the impacts of climate change. Here in our area, we've got flooding, sea level rise, and extreme weather, all growing concerns. Seeing climate change as a public health issue is increasingly the way physicians are encouraging political leadership to think about this issue. One of them is Dr. Todd Sack. He's medical director of WeCare and also with the Borland Groover Clinic. Good morning, Dr. Sack.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good to have you. Also on the show right now, joining us by phone, Mayor Nancy Shaver of St. Augustine. Good morning, Mayor Shaver.
Good morning.
And in a moment, we'll talk to Mayor Shaver about all of her efforts around sustainability and resilience planning in St. Augustine, which is really interesting to hear about. But first, Dr. Sack, climate change is a threat to public health and local public action. You have been working with the City of Jacksonville's planning department on this, and there's a newly created working group on adaptation. Can you tell us what's happening?
Yes, the city's now stepping up to get started on the flooding issue, and this new entity within the Planning Commission is called the Adaptation Area Action Working Group. It's a long name.
Long name.
And it's just beginning to look at this problem. You know, we face major risks from climate change, flooding, hurricanes, heat events, and other measures. What this commission is doing is to begin to look at just a piece of this, flooding along our 10 rivers around Jacksonville.
Certainly after Hurricane Irma, it's obvious we are vulnerable. What is this working group going to do?
Well, it only has a 6-month mandate, which is just to get them started. And it's really going to be giving advice to the city, both to the mayor and the city council, about how to approach the flooding issue. It's not going to have any real solutions. It's really just going to open the question. And there will be time for public comment. So I encourage the public and the media to pay attention to the hearings that will occur over the next few months.
We will let people know about that in a moment. But first, Mayor Shaver of St. Augustine on the line with us from down your way. You've been very proactive about this issue because, of course, St. Augustine has flooded repeatedly in recent years. Bring us up to date on your efforts to lead sustainability efforts around Florida.
We have so much going on. We, as a city, we're having a sustainability workshop with business leaders and community, actually the 31st. We're hosting Keeping History Above Water on so that we can talk about preserving our historic structures. But on a far more tactical level, we have a vulnerability assessment and an adaptation plan. We were one of three cities in Florida to be pilots in that program from the Florida DEP, DEO, now DEP. So we're very aware of the risks. I speak about our risks and our opportunities frequently. In fact, I'm doing so tonight with a neighborhood group. But we know that by 2030, our key vulnerability is our wastewater plant. And people want their toilets to flush. So we've been very very focused on that as a key part of what we need to do for resilience and adaptation. And chasing money for that, we have an Army Corps study. We're trying to get support in Washington for, and I was there the last 2 weeks ago, speaking with our congressional delegation and got some very positive response. So we're pursuing it on many levels. Communication, what do we do with our known vulnerabilities, like our wastewater plant? And then how do we get funding for the big picture?
That's certainly a big part of the puzzle. And the Keeping History Above Water National Conference will be taking place in St. Augustine May 5th through 8th, looking at how to protect St. Augustine from the rising waters. And, you know, Dr. Todd Sack, it's encouraging to hear that there's a new working group in Jacksonville looking at flooding, but it's also come under some criticism, hasn't it? Because it doesn't acknowledge the cause of what we're dealing with, climate change.
Right. This new flooding panel is just a very small piece of what we need to do. Jacksonville's honestly quite behind. In Southeast Florida, they've had a regional compact, 5 counties for 10 years working on this. Tampa got going several months ago. And we need to look comprehensively. Sure, we need to address our flooding risks and our heat event risks so that our public health infrastructure, our building infrastructure is intact and prepared. But how about the cause of this? Why don't we look seriously about the opportunities in clean energy and energy efficiency? There's wonderful jobs by attracting renewable energy projects here to Jacksonville, jobs for middle class people and poor people, and we need that kind of industry, clean industry, brought to Jacksonville.
And have you brought these ideas up to the working group?
Well, the working group is just getting started. I'm meeting with city leaders individually. I met with Councilman Bowman, the chairman of the council, yesterday and was very encouraged by his response. He acknowledges that this is a six-month commission, this Adaptation Area Action Working Group, and he's looking for recommendations for what to do next. Do we do something comprehensive like an Energy and Resilience Commission that will look at this over many years, take public comment, and formulate a 20-year plan for Jacksonville on mitigation and adaptation? And that's what we need.
And when is the next meeting of the group?
It's starting in February. They don't have
the date
announced.
Oh, they haven't met yet.
They're opening business next month.
Opening in February. So Mayor Nancy Shaver of St. Augustine, as Dr. Sack just said, other major metros around Florida are really miles ahead of Jacksonville in terms of planning for this. Jacksonville really is so behind the eight ball. However, you and St. Augustine are way out in front. You've been a leader on this issue. So what advice do you have for leadership in Jacksonville to get more proactive?
Well, first, I would love to have some positive conversations so we can share what we're doing. I reached out early in our journey, but didn't really get any interest in that kind of sharing. So I would say as a first step, I think this is a great first step, but adaptation action areas actually have a very clear definition in the parlance of sea level rise, and they're really about identifying vulnerable neighborhoods and coastal flooding. So I think that's a great step. But join the American Flood Coalition. I would strongly suggest that for Jacksonville. As I understand it, Jacksonville had the opportunity to become one of the 100 resilient cities, but decided not to go forward with that. So I'd like to offer any help and guidance to anyone who might like to share what we've learned along the way. I will say the South Florida lesson is a different one than North Florida. Miami Beach spent $330 million and had the engineer who came up with that scheme has been fired. They've stopped spending money until they have a plan. That $330 million didn't yield much. So I think there's a real danger in going forward quickly without being thoughtful. So
that's a good point.
You need a big plan, and you need to not it's the knee-jerk reactions. Oh, we'll fix this flooding in this neighborhood that I think will doom us. And quite frankly, we don't have time for a 20-year plan. I mean, we don't as a city. We know by 2030, 30% of our road network will flood roughly 90 days a year.
Right. Dr. Sack, I think that it can't be stressed enough. The time window is not as long as people think. The water is coming in.
That's right. An Energy and Resilience Commission in Jacksonville would have two big challenges. The first would be education. A two-way street is education, letting our public learn more about this problem and then taking feedback from the public. What is our public's concerns? And then the second is to formulate a plan. In Miami, their first plan was created in 2012. They updated in 2017. We need to get on that road, but it needs to be the public's plan, not the plan of a closed-door commission or a small group of business leaders, as has been our pattern in the past when we talk about little pieces of this. We need to have a public open forum for moving forward.
And is this first February meeting of the Adaptation Area Working Group open to the public?
It will be, yes.
So we just need a date and time so that people can go.
We're all waiting for it. I couldn't get it out of the commission yesterday.
I see. Well, please keep us posted. And again, let me make one more reference to Keeping History Above Water. That is the third annual national conference coming up in St. Augustine, May 5th through the 8th. Go to historyabovewater.org to learn more about that. And thank you so much to Nancy Shaver, Mayor of St. Augustine, and Dr. Todd Sack, We so appreciate both of you sharing this with us. We try to focus on this topic regularly on the show. So thank you so much for sharing your insights this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're all in this together.
That's right. Still to come, you can get your hands on some Thin Mints this month. Girl Scout cookie time is here. And up next, profiling the House of Leaf and Bean. That's in our Movable Feast. Keep listening.
Sound means you're in the Electro Lounge, where fresh, down-tempo, chill-out, and new jazz music plays Monday through Saturday nights at 9 p.m. only on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Support for Movable Feast is made possible by 927 Events, event venue and catering.
Well, welcome back. They've got some of the healthiest cuisine in town, and they're celebrating their first anniversary in Jacksonville. It's a restaurant like no other. In today's Movable Feast, our look at dining and entertainment trends around town, Lee Court of the Women's Food Alliance talks to Wen Rady of the House of Leaf and Bean.
Banana.
Welcome, Wen. Tell us, what is the House of Leaf and Bean?
House of Leaf and Bean is something really different and no one has it in Jacksonville so far. It offers all healthy, organic, fresh food drinks.
It is delicious. That's all I can say. In the past year, I've had an opportunity to come into the House of Leaf and Bean and eat some of the most beautiful, creative tofu dishes and drink delicious tea. Where are you from?
I'm originally from China. We moved here 2000, and we moved to Pittsburgh first, Pennsylvania. Then we moved here 2006 for a job position.
But it wasn't in the restaurant business. What inspired you to do the House of Leaf and Bean?
So by trade, I was a CPA, working in a corporate, climbing up the corporate ladder for many years, like many of us. And then I just moved, when we moved to Pittsburgh 2000, we, especially for me, I just embraced everything about America. You can name it. Yeah, we eat all junks that everybody likes, like pizza night, calzone night, buffalo wings. Oh, you name it. Yeah.
So you have many missions at your restaurant on mm-hmm. Beach Boulevard. And, you know, to the outside person who doesn't really know you, mm-hmm. they come into House of Leaf and Bean and they're mm-hmm. magically transformed into the beautiful menu that mm-hmm. you have that addresses family eating. Mm-hmm. Tell us some of the dishes that you've created where, you know, people can drive up also. I've seen, while I've been there sipping my delicious tea, I've seen people drive by and go to the takeout window and really take out something magical.
Correct.
Tell us some of your dishes that transform a life.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked this question. So our mission is making a healthy, clean food affordable and accessible for everyone. I know for everyone it's kind of ambitious, but most people at this point, because our price range is really affordable. If people like to drive by, sometimes we have a regular customer coming by, just order favorite fried rice or just dumplings, very simple. and it's like within $10 range. Some people just drive by to order smoothies and soup. They just love it. You know? Other options, like we have a vegan pizza bite that is low carb and gluten free. That are very delicious. They never had it. You know, never have anywhere in the world. They say that's why I got the comment from people about our pizza bites. Very popular.
You also have a very charming spot at House of Leaf and Bean. That's a meditation room. It's the first time I've ever seen one in a restaurant, and I'm just dying to come in one day and just close the door and ponder.
Yes, of course. And that's the best part of our cafe. When we designed the cafe, we said we need to have a place for our customer to experience the tranquility and peacefulness. We said Zen room is the way to go. So when you go to Zen room, the Zen room design is no talking and no device. So you can sit there just for yourself or by yourself, or you can have a friend or your loved one to sit next to each other or cross to each other, but no talking. You can drink tea or drink coffee, but just enjoy the moment and enjoy the presence for each other.
That's such a lovely thing. And mm-hmm. with Valentine's Day coming up soon, I think this is a great gift for me to give my husband. Firstly, we can have a romantic, zen, quiet, tranquil spot to enjoy together. Then we can drink tea and come and eat as many items on your delicious menu that he cares to. So I'm delighted that you came with me today here to Movable Feast, Wenrati, House of Leaf and Bean in Jacksonville, Florida. You're changing everybody's diet one meal at a time.
Correct. I love to hear that. One meal a day, we can change the world. Sustainable for your health, but also for our environment.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. Love to have you.
Thank you.
Everybody eats when they come to mind.
That's House of Leaf and Bean at Beach in San Pablo. I'm telling you, it is amazing. So check them out. Speaking of food, now maybe they're not quite as healthy as what you can eat at House of Leaf and Bean, but we all love Girl Scout cookie season, right? In a moment, a race named after everyone's favorite Girl Scout cookie. Yeah, I said it. It's the Thin Mint. And I don't want to hear any arguments that any cookie is better than that. We'll be right back.
WJCT readers are here for you. With the Florida Times Union complete with news, op-eds, and obits, our readers will bring the paper to life to serve those with blindness and other physical challenges. Need our service? Go online to wjct.org/radio reading. Listen there and register as a listener, or we'll send you a special radio free. Call us at 904-358-6308, because at Radio Reading, we give voice to the printed word.
First Coast teachers join WJCT and ViStar Credit Union for the 6th Annual Teach Conference, a day to engage, empower, and inspire. Featured keynote speakers are Wes Moore and Hamish Brewer. Educators will present breakout sessions and share best practices on topics such as equity, classroom management, and technology. Attendees will enjoy breakfast, lunch, a swag bag, and so much more on Saturday, March 2nd at the Hyatt Hotel. Find more information at wjct.org/teach.
There are, give or take, 2 million farms in this country. About a quarter of them are being run by beginning farmers.
When I started my farm, it wasn't because I felt like a competent business person or had any even basic financial literacy as an individual.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. How are you going to keep them down on the farm when they got to keep the books? That's next time on Marketplace.
Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Snow falling on Antarctica can help scientists understand global climate change. That is, if they can measure it. The wind there can blow 100 miles an hour.
When you're trying to measure snow and the snow is blowing horizontally instead of falling vertically into your precipitation gauge,
that's when you improvise. How climate scientists slow down the Antarctic wind, it's on the world. This afternoon at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
The political and humanitarian crisis in Venezuela is getting worse, and America has picked a side.
Either you stand with the forces of freedom, or you're in league with Maduro and his mayhem.
Russia has told the United States to back off. Venezuela's push for democracy, the fight for socialism, and the power of oil. Next time on 1A. Today at 10 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, Girl Scout cookie season is officially underway. And if you're dying to get your hands on some Thin Mints, you can buy them maybe outside the grocery store where you see girls selling them, or you can run to get them. Yes, we are talking right now about the Thin Mint Sprint and Cookie Crawl. Jennifer Sicott is manager of marketing and communications for the Girl Scouts of Gateway Council. Hey, Jennifer, good morning.
Hi, Melissa. Good morning.
Okay, so you know you got to have your Thin Mints. I mean, this is just law.
Of course.
I mean, it's the time of year when we must have these in our freezer. I'm sorry, but this just has to be done.
But it is a law.
It's the law. But in addition to buying cookies online, or maybe if a Girl Scout comes to your door, you could buy them that way or outside Publix, wherever you see the booths. That's all going to be happening. But in addition to that, you have something new. This is a 5K. Involving Girl Scout cookies.
Yes, it's called the Thin Mint Sprint, funny enough. And it is on February 23rd, 7:30 a.m. And it's through St. John's Town Center. So, you know, we kind of combine some fun things as far as you get to, you know, run around the town center where you can kind of like do a little window shopping, I guess. And then also everyone who participates in the race receives a box of Girl Scout cookies.
Very nice. Yeah. Is this the first time you guys have done this?
We did last year
as
well.
You did do it last year. Okay. So this is a way to really promote the largest financial investment in girls in the United States. This is probably one of the most powerful entrepreneurship programs for girls ever.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the statistics are great. You know, at least 50% of congresswomen were Girl Scouts. Lots of business leaders were Girl Scouts. All of the women astronauts were Girl Scouts. So, you know, it is a very well-proven machine that, you know, girls who participate in the programs that we offer really learn real leadership experience. And we do it through four different ways. We have STEM programs. We have outdoor programs. So girls get to experience, you know, camping and archery, those types of things. Entrepreneurship, which is our cookie program. Mm-hmm. And also life skills, too. So we teach, you know, some of those basic skills like first aid. Girls can participate in that, babysitting courses, things that are very important that kind of round out what we call our Girl Scout leadership experience.
Absolutely. So to register for the Thin Mint Sprint, and if you've never done this before, it's easy to do. Mm-hmm. It's a 5K and there's a cookie crawl, which is a 1 mile. This is coming up Saturday, February 23rd, 7:30 a.m. at the St. John's Town Center. You can register at Thin Mint Sprint. 5k.org. Can you register on site?
You can register on site. Also, too, I mean, it's a very family fun event. So bring the kids. You know, the kid, we have the cookie crawl. Also, we have a virtual race. So in the event, you know, you are running for another race or you have something coming up, you can participate in the virtual race and run for Girl Scout cookies at your leisure.
Speaking of which, let's talk about these cookies
for
a minute.
Yes.
This year, you are selling 8 varieties of Girl Scout cookies. And we don't really need to talk about any of the varieties because obviously you have to only buy Thin Mints. I'm just kidding. You can buy any kind you want. You are actually now, though, I did not know this. You are selling gluten-free cookies, Toffee-tastic cookies,
yes,
they're called.
So
that's new. And you're selling s'mores, which are a kind of a new cookie as well.
They are. They're, you know, Girl Scouts and s'mores go way, way back. And, you know, it was kind of something that was meant to happen, you know, to us to have a cookie that's s'mores. But it is like a graham cracker cookie with chocolate and marshmallow filling. And it's a clean cookie, too. So if you're looking for something that doesn't have any preservatives or artificial colors or anything, this is the cookie for you.
All right. Look for the Girl Scouts. They're out there selling. When are they starting? Now?
Well, Girl Scouts are selling cookies right now. But you'll find them outside your favorite stores like your Publix's and your Winn-Dixie's next week.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look for them next week. Register for the Thin Mint Sprint at thinmintsprint5k.org. Jennifer Sakat with Girl Scouts of Gateway Council. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thanks for the cookies, too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm going to have to grab a few of these boxes before they disappear.
Oh, yeah.
In just a few moments. So thank you. And that is our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Heather Schatz. Michelle Corum is our director. And if you missed anything this morning, catch our rebroadcast tonight at 8 o'clock. If you're listening to that show, keep listening for the Electro Lounge. I'm Melissa Ross. Thanks for being with us here on First Coast Connect. It's 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. We'll be back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.